24-4071, Mukantagara versus Mullen. And Mr. Black, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Hello again, distinguished judges and counsel. May it please the court. My name is Daniel Black, counsel for appellants Agnes Mukantagara and her son, Ebenezer Shaka. The Supreme Court's decision in Mullen v. Doe does not change or call into question this panel's well-reasoned, now vacated decision in this case from January, holding that non-discretionary threshold eligibility determinations which lead to discretionary actions or decisions are subject to judicial review. The bar to judicial review in the specific subsection of the TPS statute at issue in Mullen v. Doe is easily distinguishable from our statutes at 1252A2B2 and 1157C4. In Mullen, the Attorney General, the subsection of the statute, 8 U.S.C. 1254A(b)(5A), bars judicial review of any determination of the Attorney General with respect to the designation or termination or extension of a foreign state for TPS. That very broad language is intended to bar review of more than just the final agency action, but also any determination with respect to it, because the language is so broad. Whereas 8 U.S.C. 1252A2B2 has narrowing and limiting language. It says no court shall have jurisdiction to review any decisions or actions of the AG or DHS secretary, the authority for which is specified under this subchapter to be in the discretion of the Attorney General or the DHS secretary. So under our statute, a decision or action is subject to judicial review unless it is specifically designated to be discretionary. And as this panel wrote in January, 1157C4 lays out a two-step process. At step one, USCIS evaluates whether the non-citizen meets the non-discretionary threshold eligibility requirement of not, in fact, meeting the definition of a refugee at the time of their entry before reaching step two. And then at step two, USCIS has prosecutorial discretion to terminate or not the refugee status of that non-citizen. And this court correctly labeled step one as a non-discretionary eligibility determination and a threshold requirement, and step two as discretion to terminate. Now, when the Supreme Court majority wrote, if the final agency action is unreviewable, then so too are subsidiary determinations, it immediately cited to the D.C. Circuit Court case of Amgen Inc. v. Smith, which provides a vital instruction. It says that courts must determine whether the challenged agency action is, quote, of the sort shielded from review, and whether the challenged agency action falls within the scope of the preclusion on judicial review. So the important distinction between Mullen and this case is what the language of the statute is meant to shield from judicial review. In Mullen, it was any determination in regards to the TPS country designation, whereas in this case, it is only discretionary decisions or actions by the Attorney General or DHS Secretary.
Well, in
And
Poland, the court focuses on whether it's a subsidiary determination that's relied on in reaching the decision that is non-reviewable. And there it was the obligation to confer with other agencies before making the determination about temporary protected status, right?
right.
Here, I look at it, and I'm not even sure it's a preliminary determination. If the agency were to determine that the person was, in fact, a refugee at the time of admission, we never get to step two, do we?
That's correct. That's correct. That's why it's a threshold requirement, which is very different from a subsidiary determination. I would agree. And in Mullen v. Doe, the subsidiary determinations was of the sort and within the scope on judicial of the preclusion on judicial review, because it encompassed any determination in regards to a TPS country designation. But in this case,
Wasn't the move that Justice Kagan made in dissent, I sense, is similar to the argument you're posing here. And, so she accepted that framework work that these subsidiary determinations are distinct, and the majority opinions, pretty broadly rejects that narrowing of the statute. And I guess I hear you saying the word any does all the work in Doe, and since we don't have a similarly encompassing word in our statute, that's the distinguishing factor. Is that a fair restatement of your position?
Well, Your Honor, we do have an any decision or action. I think the distinction is in what the statute is meant to bar from review. And when it's any determination in regards to the TPS designation, that can encompass much of the subsidiary determinations that go with it. But here, where we have it must be specified to be in the discretion, and where the preliminary threshold determination of whether or not someone was a refugee at the time of their entry, that's non-discretionary, and so doesn't even fall into what the statute has barred from judicial review. And so I would say the answer. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Does it matter that in Doe, the requirement to quote confer doesn't really have any standard by which we would look at it? Whereas here we have a cross-reference to the definition of refugee. Do you see that as a significant difference?
Yes, I do, Judge, because the in Heckler, there has to be some standard against which we can make a decision, right? And here we do have a very clear standard of what the definition of refugee is and what those requirements are. And it's a mixed question of law and fact that can be reviewed by a court. Whereas, yeah, the TPS designation statute of the country. Also, very broad and without those specific criteria. And so I would argue that the answer to this panel's first question is no. Mullen v. Doe does not call into question this court's holding. It also doesn't even call into question Mejia Rodriguez v. DHS, the 11th Circuit decision, which this panel cited in its now vacated decision in January, where the 11th Circuit held that district courts have jurisdiction to review another part of that same TPS statute related to the granting of TPS to individuals. This panel analogized that two-step process of individual TPS decisions to the two-step refugee terminations in 1157C4, and that still holds. In granting TPS to an individual, USCIS must first make a non-discretionary statutory eligibility determination under 1254AC1, and then there is a discretionary grant or not of TPS to the individual. Mullen v. Doe doesn't even reach that non-discretionary statutory eligibility determination in the same TPS statute, let alone the statutes in this case. I'd like to move on to the panel's second question. Judicial review of USCIS's determination that appellants were not, in fact, refugees at the time of their entry to the U.S. is only available through APA review at the district court. The APA grants district court jurisdiction to review final agency action from which legal consequences flow and for which there is no adequate remedy in any other court. Now, the government in their brief conceded that final agency action is not before this court. And in regards to legal consequences that flow from this, we listed many ways that appellants have been negatively affected by USCIS's determination. But additionally, I'd like to mention today that Ms. Mukontagara filed an application to adjust her status with USCIS through her other US citizen son, and that application was denied as recently as 2022 by USCIS, citing the same persecutor bar that they relied on to terminate her refugee status. So legal consequences are still flowing from USCIS's non-discretionary determination in 2016.
Does Ms. Mukontagara have an adequate remedy in terms of that she could file for asylum?
Your Honor, this case is unique because it's not just about Ms. Mukontagara. If it was, than an
I'm
asylum.
only asking about Miss Makantagara right now.
And for her, it is not sufficient, Judge, because she has a legal right to be able to use her status to shield her son with her refugee status. She cannot do that with an asylum status.
Does she have standing to assert her son's claim?
Yes, Judge, under the TVPRA, which is we call it the I'm blanking on it. her son, because he was under the age of 21 at the time of their entry, was shielded by her refugee status, and he did not need to independently prove his own status. He lost that over the passage of time just by turning 21, but she has a right to shield her children under the act to be able to protect them from deportation. But it is her right that we are challenging here and that we are asserting that was violated, and we're trying to restore that through this APA review. And so the petition for review, the government still asserts that the petition for review is the manner in which we can get review, and they assert four different ways that we can get around supposedly the restriction at 1252 B4A, which states that this court must decide the petition only on the administrative record on which the order of removal is based. But all those suggestions, I would say, are speculative and not viable. First, transfer to the district court. That's exactly what we've been asking for this whole time. That's why we filed our complaint in the district court. We want judicial review by the district court, and that can absolutely be done through APA review. But in its brief, the government conceded that appellants, quote, have not yet had their claims heard by an arbiter. We agree with the government that the district court should be that arbiter, but not of the record of the removal proceedings on the PFR, because appellants are not challenging anything related to the removal proceedings. Appellants are seeking review only of the record of USCIS's final agency actions under the APA. And that's something that the immigration judge said he has no jurisdiction to do because of BIA precedent in matter of ASJ. Their second suggestion, that the 10th Circuit simply take judicial notice of administrative documents that appellants believe should be in the record of the PFR. But then the government immediately undermines its own suggestion by stating that judicial notice is doubtful in this case, and appellants do not have access to USCIS's full decision-making record. So how could we ask this court to take judicial notice of an undisclosed record? We can't. The third suggestion was that the 10th Circuit could appoint a special master to hold hearings. It's unclear to me what a special master could do on remand that the district court couldn't do. And then the fourth suggestion is to file a motion to supplement the record. But we did file a motion to supplement the record in the PFR case of Mr. Shaka, and the government opposed that motion, and this court denied it. So none of these suggestions seem to be a genuine way for appellants to seek adequate remedy in another court.
Well, if we disagreed with you and we thought there was a way to supplement the record, would you then agree that there's an adequate remedy at law?
It is up to this court, and so we are just wanting the review. We don't see a way that there could be review through the PFR, but if there is, fantastic, because appellants are just seeking judicial review and a way to challenge USCIS's non-discretionary preliminary determination of eligibility. And we would ask the court to do so. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. Let's hear from Ms. Ahmed.
Good morning. It may please the court, Anisa Ahmed, on behalf of the federal government. Your honors, for the reasons discussed in the government's answering brief and the supplemental brief, this court should affirm the district court's dismissal of appellant's complaint. First, the Supreme Court's recent decision in Mullen v. Doe held that cases arising under the APA, such as this one, that if a final agency action is unreviewable, so too are the subsidiary determinations.
What
Mullen
if
simply
I don't agree with you that this is a subsidiary determination? It's not part and parcel of the decision That's discretionary, which is what should we do with a person who has been granted refugee status but was not actually a refugee when admitted? I mean,
Certainly.
that's a discretionary decision.
Certainly. So the termination decision is the discretionary decision. However, whether or not Ms. Mukantagara was a refugee when she was admitted is intrinsically tied up into that termination decision. It can't
No,
really
it's
stand
not.
alone.
It determines whether or not you have to make that decision. If they were to decide that she was, in fact, a refugee, we never even get to the discretionary decision.
Exactly, because it is directly related to whether or not
Well,
USCIS can make the.
related isn't the same as subsidiary.
But it would be a subsidiary decision
It's
because USCIS.
preliminary, which is related.
I don't know that a preliminary decision is separate from a subsidiary decision because the ultimate decision is a terminate is the termination decision. USCIS can't make the termination decision without the finding that Ms. Mukantagara wasn't a refugee. And so I think
Well,
parsing
let me
through.
ask you this. The Doe Court is dealing with judicial review of any determination. And under 1252A2B double I, we're dealing with any other decision. And the Supreme Court in Doe distinguishes between the terms determination and decision, indicating that decision is narrower than determination. The Supreme Court in Doe says that a determination could mean the same thing as decision, but it could also mean the chain of events leading up to that decision. That suggests to me that decision is the singular discretionary decision, but determination pulls in all of the steps.
I think that might be parsing through the language a little bit too much because the court also said that decision can also be synonymous with determination, or I'm sorry, determination can be synonymous with the word decision, but then ultimately said that the ultimate
Well,
decision, or
but it can
excuse
be
me.
just synonymous with the word decision if you're looking at a single act, but it can also mean more than decision and encompass the steps leading to that singular decision. So I don't think it's saying determination is broader than decision.
I think that this might be potentially parsing through that language a little bit too closely and putting too
Well,
much
that's what we're
credence.
supposed to do on statutory interpretation.
Certainly, but I would
And
also
when
say.
Congress uses different words, we're supposed to say, oh, they must mean different things
And
here.
certainly, while Congress uses different words, I think we need to look at A2B as a whole. And A2B, both clauses one and two, use the word judgment in clause one and any other decision or action in clause two. And in different jurisdictional bars, or judicial review bars in the INA, the court uses different language. For instance, we can contrast the use of the word judgment in clause one, which we know from Patel means every other preliminary eligibility requirement for the benefits that are enumerated in clause one. That also seems to be the same sort of jurisdictional bar or judicial review bar that's found in the TPS decision, but those are different words as well. What we need to look at is the INA as a whole, but also 1252 as a whole. We are looking at an act where Congress has throughout insulated certain discretionary decisions by the executive in the immigration context. And specifically in Clause 1, Congress insulated judicial review over certain judgments and any other decision or action. And so if we're going to look at the jurisdictional bars and say that the end result, the end determination, judgment subsumes all of the previous acts, decisions, or determinations, then that has to hold true for clause two as well, because as we've noted previously, clause two is broader than clause one. And so I don't think that there's a real true distinction between the use of the term determination in 1254A and 12 and the use of the term decision or action in 1252A2B2.
That's not the only difference, though. We do have this language with respect to in 1254A, which really that's a inflates the tire a lot, seems to me.
I think reading Mullen and Justice Alito's opinion, I think that term with respect to really buttresses the use of the term determination, but I think determination stands alone. But regardless of the use with regard to, I think we need to look at just the look more broadly at the plain term or the plain language of Clause 1. And specifically in Clause 1, I'm sorry, in Clause 2, the Congress said any other decision or action, the authority for which is specified under the subchapter to be in the executive's discretion. So
And
when
that
Congress.
that's the second part of the determination. There's no discretion on whether somebody was a refugee. It cross-references the definition of refugee. But when you get down to the issue of, so we've given refugee status to this person improvidently, that's essentially what the first question is. And it's within the discretion, or it was in the discretion of the secretary to determine what do you do now? We've got somebody who was granted refugee status improvidently. And so, what's the proper thing to do? Of course, we now have a regulation that says there's no discretion here at all. They must remove the refugee status. I mean, does that take us out of 1252A2B2 because there's no longer any discretion here?
No, because the regulation language is not what matters. It's the statutory terms themselves. That is what matters here. And as a
Well, is
practical.
it a practical analysis? I mean, the question is this an area where there's discretion of the secretary? And the answer to that question today is no. But
There is, as a practical matter, there is discretion. USCIS, as a practical matter, does often find that persons didn't meet the definition of refugee when they were admitted, and then as a matter of grace, we'll just let their error lie. That the regulation is written in a certain way does not negate the fact that the statute allows for discretion, and that USCIS often does exercise that discretion to the benefit of the non-citizen.
and would you agree that a matter of grace is exactly the kind of area where we don't have any standards by which to review the decision of the secretary? It's a matter of grace.
Sure. So the decision whether or not to terminate, well, certainly, and that's what we've been saying, is that there's no
But with
discretion.
respect to whether or not the person was in fact a refugee at the time they were admitted, there's a specific statute that is cross-referenced that tells us what the definition of a refugee is. I mean, it seems to me they're very different decisions.
Even if they are considered different decisions, and again, I would maintain that they are intrinsically tied because you don't really have the termination decision without the finding that the person did not meet, was not a refugee when they were admitted. Regardless of that fact, that is a question that can be answered in a PFR. And so I think the question here that we're looking at is whether or not, like the courts in supplemental or request for supplemental briefing asked us whether or not there's an avenue for review. So it seems to be, whether the concern is that there'll ever be review of that question, and that is reviewable in a PFR.
Well, the first question is whether we have jurisdiction right
Sure.
now
Yes. Yeah.
to review the determination of whether she was a refugee at the time of admission.
And again, we would say that Mullins makes very clear that all of these questions are subsumed into the final decision. And additionally, I think it's worth noting that in the APA provision, 5 USC 704, there the provision states that review of intermediate decisions or preliminary decisions are only reviewable when the final agency action is reviewable. But I think as a practical matter here, we should note, or that I would have to note, is that 1252A2B2 precludes review over the termination decision. So even relying on the APA, there's no mechanism for review under the APA itself because 701A1 and 2 preclude review here. And so I think, just as a general matter, and I know that 1252A2B2 is separate from the APA, but as a practical matter, you can't separate out these decisions. And appellant's own briefing states that. They state that the only way that they get to review is through the final agency action, but they don't get review of that final agency action, which is a termination decision.
If
Counsel,
we agreed with you, could you play out how the petitioner here would get an opportunity to challenge the removal?
Sure, certainly. So we laid out three different ways for them, for appellants to be able to supplement their PFRs. Again, we maintained that Mr. Shayaka supplementation would not be appropriate for him because he's conceded his removability. But just talking about Ms. Mukantagara, she could, upon the PFR record, if a panel, presumably in this court, were to review the record and find that it's insufficient to evaluate her claims about whether or not she was a refugee at the time she was admitted, this court could transfer to the district court with orders just to develop the record further about the termination, about her refugee status. And then once that record's been developed, review that PFR record, the record that was developed in the during immigration proceedings, and then also the additional materials developed upon the transfer.
If we
And
had the
then,
ability to do that, why would we take all those additional steps? You think that's required by DOE?
I think that's required by the statutory scheme that Congress wrote, right? I understand that it may seem that this is, we're already in the district court and we're asking for a transfer back to the district court. I understand that that might seem redundant or maybe a waste of time, or to your Honor's point, additional steps. But this is the step, this is the process that Congress has envisioned. And so it's not really a waste of time so much as just abiding by what Congress asks for.
Why are there two subsections then? Why not just have everything fall under little I? And
Sure.
that, I mean, they obviously wrote two separate subsections with different language that I presume were intended to mean different things.
So Clause 1 specifically discusses five provisions that provide relief from removal, and Clause 2 just talks about everything else that is discretionary. All other discretionary decisions, it's a catch-all. And I think what might be helpful is to
Well,
reference
you
Justice
could have
Scalia.
just put those five things and all other discretionary decisions in sub one if they mean the same thing. I mean, there's no reason to break out other discretionary decisions if there's not a different standard there.
Well, I think what's also helpful is to remember that Clause 2 includes the language, the authority for which other decision or action, the authority for which is specified under the subchapter to be in the secretary's decision. So it wasn't just talking about the ultimate discretionary decision, because when the executive acts pursuant to that discretionary decision to make the ultimate discretionary decision, every time they make a predicate finding or an eligibility requirement or some sort of subsidiary decision, they are acting in accordance or pursuant to that authority that gives them discretion. The only reason we really care about the refugee finding here is because of the termination decision. And so I
Well,
think.
but would you, I mean, do you think that whether someone is a refugee or not a refugee is completely within the discretion of the secretary? Or do you think Congress has set out a definition of refugee that must be followed?
I think that they have set out a standard for which there
Well,
is
it's
to
a
certainly and
definition
con
of reference.
and but that's prevalent throughout that's prevalent throughout the INA, including in other
So, in
discretionary.
your opinion, if somebody met the definition of refugee, the secretary would have discretion to nonetheless say you're not a refugee.
No, that's not correct.
So it's not discretionary.
It is discretionary in that they can, in that USCIS can exercise discretion to not terminate status. And its discretion doesn't have to be like without bounds. The discretion just has to be,
Well,
is
they
there
don't have
discretion?
discretion if the person is determined to be a refugee, right?
That's not true because the statute says that the executive may terminate.
But you
USCIS is.
never get to step two. You only get to step two if they were not a refugee at the time of admission, right?
Certainly. Well, you would only get to the termination decision, yes.
Okay, well, that's the discretionary part. So if there's a determination that the person was a refugee at the time of admission, you're done. You never get to step two, correct?
That would be correct.
Okay,
I see.
it looks like your time's up. Go ahead and wrap up, and Mr.
Yes.
Black has some rebuttal.
Certainly. Thank you. And for the reasons discussed today, as well as all of our briefing, we ask that this court affirm the district court's dismissal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Black, you had some rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor. In the government's brief, in a footnote, they acknowledge that the question of final agency action is not before this court, and they assume that USCIS's decision is final agency action. But then they go on to argue, and they still are arguing today, that review of that final agency action is available through the PFR. But this court has already established 3 years ago that USCIS's legal determination in this case is not part of any PFR, a final order of removal. That's for the 2023 decision in this same case. I would also point out that I don't think the government is being fully transparent when it says that Mr. Shaka conceded removability and that limits his ability to supplement the record. He did deny the exact same charge of removability as his mother in the removal proceedings. There was an additional charge against him that he conceded. That was related specifically to the fact that he had his status revoked, but his denial of that of all the charges would not have changed anything in this case. I don't think that that is correct. And so, Your Honors,
I'm a little confused on what you just said. Can you walk me through again
yes, I'd be happy to.
what he conceded and what he denied?
Yes, in the notice to appears on both the cases for both the mother and the son. They both were charged with the same charge of removability under 237A1A. And they both denied those charges, saying that they were not removable because they did actually have a valid refugee status when they entered. Now, the son had a second charge of removability, which was related to the fact that his refugee status had been revoked later by USCIS. He conceded that because it actually had been revoked by USCIS, but he didn't concede that that was a proper revocation, just that it had happened. And had he denied, as the government is saying, and had he denied that second one, his concession or denial of that second charge changes nothing, because he still had to file his own asylum application and prove that he individually, independent of his mother, qualified for asylum status. Which he could not do because he was a minor child when he entered the United States. And so that distinction between the mother's case and ability to supplement the record and the son's, I think, has no standing. And the only way, Your Honors, that USCIS's non-discretionary legal determination can be reviewed is through APA review at the district court, where they could reverse this decision and reestablish refugee status for both the mother and the father. We need not invent new ways to achieve that review when it has already existed for 80 years since the passage of the APA. And so the Supreme Court decision in Mullen v. Doe has changed nothing in this case. We ask the court to again find that 1252A2B2 applies only to discretionary actions and that non-discretionary threshold eligibility determinations, like in 1157C4, are subject to review. And we ask that this court remand the case back to the district court for further proceedings under the APA. Thank you.
All right, thank you, counsel. We appreciate the arguments. You're excused, and the case will be submitted to our panel.